content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the National Geographic, News and Observer, and AAA Go magazine. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. On today's Armchair Traveler, we'll focus on a very basic kind of travel, using our feet. Hiking is no doubt one of the oldest forms of getting from A to B. Today, hiking remains a highly popular pastime, enjoyed by young and old alike. In the October 2020 issue of National Geographic, we came across an article titled, "Our Trails, National Scenic Paths Take Us to America's Last Wild Places, But They're Threatened by Neglect, Climate Change, and Crowding. It's Up to Us to Preserve Them." The article is written by best-selling author and Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times. His article includes photographs taken by Zachary Kramer, and additional reporting provided by Stephanie Pearson. And before we begin, the article does have a little feature that I thought I'd share with you about hiking America. It says the combined length of the Pacific Crest, Continental Divide, and Appalachian National Scenic Trails is about 7,900 miles. More than 400 people have completed all three, an accomplishment known as the Triple Crown of Hiking. My summer place is priceless. Not even Jeff Bezos or Bill Gates could buy it today. It sits on the slopes of Mount Hood in Oregon, near the Pacific Crest Trail. It's at timberline, where stunted trees give way to delicate alpine meadows bursting with flowers. A glacier-fed creek serenades me as I sleep at night. I've been visiting my summer place since I was 14. Most of the year it's covered in deep snow, but even in winter, it reassures me from a distance. If I have trouble sleeping, I conjure the scene, and nature lulls me. Fortunately, it's in my family, and I hope my unborn grandchildren will one day play in the brook as well. Yet, while it's in my family, it's also in yours. It's my land and your land. It's public land, part of a wilderness called Paradise Park. It lies near a trail built around Mount Hood in the 1930s during the depths of the Great Depression by the Civilian Conservation Corps. It was eventually stitched into the Pacific Crest Trail. Even when we were a much poorer nation, we were able to allocate resources to make this wilderness accessible. Yet today, as one of the richest countries in the world, we find ourselves unable to maintain these trails properly. Trails are in danger for interrelated reasons, including climate change, fire, and lack of financing. We not only have failed to protect our inheritance, but it sometimes seems as if we're squandering it. So many of them have disappeared, says Barney Scout Mann, arguably the dean of America's long-distance trails, as well as author of Journeys North about his Pacific Crest Trail thru-hike. Mann, president of the board of the Trails Advocacy Group Partnership for the National Trail System, has been hiking since the 1960s and recalls secondary trails that were never maintained and so returned to wilderness. Trails are a choice, says man. If we don't use them, they disappear. I became acquainted with backpacking when I was about 6 years old, and my dad took my mom and me on my first of many hunting trips in pursuit of wild boar. The wild boar were never imperiled, but I was hooked on the wilderness. Then in 1970, a 120-pound teenager named Eric Ryback reported that he had hiked the entire Pacific Crest Trail, which runs from Mexico to Canada. I devoured a National Geographic story about the trail and about Ryback's journey, as well as the best-selling book that he wrote. I was a farm boy in rural Oregon, about 2 hours from the trail, and I wanted to be Ryback. The next year, I used my berry-picking earnings to buy a $19.99 backpack and set out to hike the Pacific Crest Trail. I have not stopped hiking since. Ryback helped launch the first wave of interest in America's long trails, and then Bill Bryson and especially Cheryl Strayed started second and third waves when their books appeared about the Appalachian and Pacific Crest Trails. People now come from all over the world to hike America's long trails. For my own family, these trails have been a rich part of life. Some kids have summer camp, and some families have beach vacations. My family had trails. My wife and I discovered that while our three kids squabbled on road trips, hiking left them too exhausted to bicker. We packed our youngest, Caroline, along on her first backpacking trip when she was just 1 year old, and her passion for hiking has grown over the years. When she was 14 in 2012, she and I began to hike the whole Pacific Crest Trail, 200 or 300 miles at a time, finishing 6 years later. We tangled with rattlesnakes and dehydration in the Southern California desert near the Mexico border, with altitude sickness and snow blindness in the California Sierra Range, with mammoth snows that forced us to go off trail in Oregon, and with torrential rains and freezing cold in northern Washington. Caroline is a plucky girl who never complains, so I knew there was a problem one morning in Washington as we marched through an icy drizzle. "Dad," Caroline began, as if she were asking a purely academic question, "how do you know when you have hypothermia?" A trail culture has emerged with its own vocabulary and nomenclature. Hikers have trail names. I'm Scribbler because I'm a writer, while Caroline is Tumbler because she was a gymnast and still does handstands on any cliff edge appropriate for scaring her parents. PUDS is short for pointless ups and downs, as when a trail sends exhausted hikers up and over a hill rather than around it. And trail angels are people who show up to bring cold drinks or hot pizza where a road intersects the trail. Trails offer an antidote to our post-industrial complacency and materialism. Spinoza, the great 17th century Dutch philosopher, argued that nature and its laws constitute God, and you understand Spinoza perfectly with the view at sunset on a mountain pass. Trails are the cathedrals of the wild, leaving us both awed and humbled before a presence larger than ourselves. That yearning for trails seemed magnified in a time of plague. For Americans cooped up indoors in the spring of 2020 because of the coronavirus, fearful for jobs and lives, the endless expanse of the outdoors was like a beacon for the soul, yet many parks were closed and thru-hikers were told to go home. Not all obeyed. The virus perhaps reinforces the cravings to find our own Walden Pond and gain perspective on a tumultuous world. When Tumbler and I were discussing hypothermia in Washington, a woman named Heather Anderson was setting a record by finishing the entire Pacific Crest Trail in 60 days. That's an average of 44 miles a day over extraordinarily rugged terrain. As a child, Anderson hated exercise, but then she heard about the Appalachian Trail and was enchanted. This concept that there was an actual footpath where you could walk thousands of miles just really struck a chord, she says. I didn't know anything about hiking. Anderson eventually became the first woman to hike all three long trails within 1 year. The Appalachian Trail, 2,190 miles, running from Georgia to Maine, the Pacific Crest Trail, 2,650 miles, and the Continental Divide Trail, the 3,100-mile king of trails running down the spine of the Rockies. If you're hiking north on the Continental Divide Trail and spit to your left, the molecules may end up in the Pacific Ocean. Spit to your right, and they may end up in the Atlantic Ocean. But if you spend too much time thinking about that, you might walk off a cliff. The number of thru-hikers, those who complete a trail in one go, has soared. No one tracks exact figures, but trail monitors estimate that in the 1990s, about 150 people set out to thru-hike the Pacific Crest Trail each year. Now almost 5,000 do. Likewise, for the Appalachian Trail, the figure has risen in that period from perhaps 1,500 a year to 4,000, and the Continental Divide Trail has surged from an estimated 10 a year to about 500. Thru-hikers draw attention and jealousy, but they make up far less than 1% of trail users. Most are day hikers, weekend warriors, or section hikers, and all are an evolving crowd. When I began distance hiking as a teenager, the trails were mostly a domain of white men, people like me. But women, such as Anderson, are now everywhere on the trails. Strayed's book, Wild, attracted throngs of young women, some like Strayed, seeking to find themselves by losing themselves in the wilderness. As Strayed told me, I lost 6 toenails over the course of my 94-day hike on the Pacific Crest Trail, but I gained everything that matters. Numbers of hikers have soared in part because technology and lighter gear have made the wilderness more accessible. To be sure, the 50-year-old National Geographic article about the Pacific Crest Trail made a similar observation, noting, wonderingly, that a nylon tent added only 3.5 pounds to a pack's weight. To put that in perspective, for shelter, I now use a Z-Pax tarp that weighs 7.4 ounces. I realize that in another 50 years, some National Geographic writer will boast that her tarp has helium pouches that make it weightless. In a time of inequality, trails equalizes. Obviously, it costs money to buy gear and food, but there are typically no access fees for backpackers. Car campers may pay, but hikers just spread out a ground sheet and a sleeping bag, and the spot is theirs. Only a bear can pull rank. Hikers, likewise, are economically diverse. Construction workers mingle with surgeons. There is no class divide on the trails, no wealth or poverty, just PUDs that humble us all. However, there is a lack of racial and ethnic diversity. Typically, there have been a few black and brown hikers, although their numbers are slowly increasing, partly through the efforts of nonprofits such as Outdoor Afro that are connecting African Americans to the outdoors. Elise Walker, the first African American to complete the Big Three trails, says she had been warned about the white supremacists in Idaho, but loved her hike through that state on the Continental Divide Trail. The people there were amazingly friendly, she recalls. Her trail experiences left her thinking that the mental geography that divides America into red and blue states misses something about goodwill that transcends politics. There were so many people who just randomly picked you up and took you into their houses and fed you, she says. My love for America did grow. The hiking community is particularly short of Native Americans, even though the trails cut through their ancestral lands. These lands were stolen from Native people's ancestors, says Amanda Wheelock of the Continental Divide Trail Coalition. Every single mile is ancestral homeland to at least one tribe. That's something that the national trail system in general doesn't always do a great job of talking about and thinking about in our management decisions, and that's something that the CDT is working on, and we're really bad at. We're trying to get better. Environmentalists should try harder, I believe, not just to protect wilderness, but also to usher people into it in non-destructive ways. Partly that's to make the hiking community more diverse, partly to ensure that young people reared on screens get the chance to be stung by a bee, and partly to ensure that there is a long-term constituency for the outdoors. We need to build that constituency because, frankly, trails haven't done well on our watch. They're struggling. Overall, trail length in America has continued to increase, despite the lost trails. But many are in disastrous shape, and the long-distance paths are sustained in part with volunteer labor. Some 1 million trail maintenance hours are donated each year to clear fallen trees and remove brush. But this isn't enough. The Continental Divide Trail is still unfinished, with long sections of the route following roadways, and the same is true of the next major trail I plan to tackle, the Pacific Northwest Trail, which runs from Montana through Idaho and Washington State to the Pacific Ocean. Volunteers can clear a fallen tree, but they can't survey a route and build the trail. The lack of maintenance that is perhaps most infuriating is the failure to maintain drainage channels at regular intervals. Without them, rain turns a trail into a creek. Once in central Oregon, Tumbler and I were hiking up a steep creekside trail during a tremendous downpour, and we couldn't tell whether it was the creek we were walking in or the trail. There were simply two creeks side by side. After such erosion, the trail becomes rocky, so backpackers hike along the side of it. Soon, multiple paths scar the wilderness. Why aren't trails better maintained? How is it that Franklin Roosevelt's impoverished America could carve great trails in the wilderness, and today's affluent America can't even manage basic upkeep? The Forest Service budgets were eaten up by firefighting, says Tom Vilsack, who, as President Barack Obama's Secretary of Agriculture, oversaw the Forest Service. While the Forest Service has a new national trail strategy, it has trouble extracting the adequate funding needed from Congress, and fires inevitably swallow up resources. One very hopeful sign, Congress in 2020 embraced the Great American Outdoors Act, which would provide billions of dollars for public and land projects. It's one of the most important pieces of legislation supporting public lands in decades. The surge in fires is partly a consequence of climate change that has left forests drier. In addition, warming has empowered the bark beetle and allowed it to devastate coniferous forests from Alaska to Colorado. Anyone hiking the Pacific Crest or Continental Divide Trail will see huge expanses of forest that look like primeval woods unaffected by humans, except that they are brown and dead, another loss related to climate change. These dead forests become tinder. The result is that fires are now a fact of trail life. As a young backpacker, I never thought about forest fires, but in the dozen years or so, I've encountered two forest fires close up. Another time, smoke was so bad that I wore a face mask while hiking. There's plenty of blame to go around for the plight of the trails. Mining, logging, and ranching interests seek to monetize public lands, diminishing the wilderness experience. Political leaders haven't always shown the passion for protecting public lands that Teddy Roosevelt did. Climate change continues unimpeded. Yet we hikers also have to look in the mirror, for all of us bear some responsibility. Most of us have been too busy hiking on trails to lobby adequately on their behalf. We've often been complacent about climate change. And backpackers and mountain bikers, instead of working together to preserve wilderness they all cherish, sometimes spend too much time feuding. We also can't blame anyone else for the ugliest blights on our trail. Toilet paper messes, especially near campsites. A backpacker's trowel for digging a cat hole weighs less than a half an ounce and should be on every equipment list. One can argue that protected wildernesses are the real American exceptionalism. The world has many democracies, many countries have advanced technology, and some nations have longer life expectancy or higher per capita income. But no other major country has a network of long trails that can compete with America's. The way to understand Russia may be to take the Trans-Siberian Railway across the endless steppe, to see Australia fly, in Venice hop into a gondola, but to appreciate America, take a hike. These great trails are an only-in-America story. The loyalty they inspire among their alumni is reflected in the way that much of the maintenance is done by volunteer trail crews. Our wild places put us in our place. There, as the saying goes, America's best idea, and we must become better stewards so that our children's children can enjoy the opportunities to be savaged by mosquitoes or frightened by rattlesnakes and be awestruck by the raw majesty of our natural world. Among the many trails available to hikers today is a scenic nearly 40-mile walk on a well-known island off the coast of California. Los Angeles Times writer Mary Forgione reports that Catalina Island lets you walk on the wild side. Her article was published in the September 20th, 2020 issue of the News and Observer. It was the first day of my trip to Santa Catalina, and the island already was working its magic. I didn't see anyone for miles as I hiked an eastern segment of the Trans-Catalina Trail, which stretches from the town of Avalon to Parsons Landing, a remote beach in the western side of the island. But that didn't last. As I rounded a corner, I came upon two, or was it three, bison lolling on the hillside. Catalina's wild side can be surprising, and not just because of bison. The 38.5-mile trail that runs along ridgetops and crisscrosses the island in and out of canyons made me feel miles away. How could I forget how freeing an island visit could be? Planning a getaway is tricky these days. I didn't want to wander far from my home in Los Angeles, San Pedro section, because of the pandemic. On Catalina, I felt safe and serene, all without straying out of Los Angeles County. The wild side. Catalina, the closest of the Channel Islands to the mainland, measures about 22 miles long and 8 miles at its widest point. Most people visit Avalon, a beach town with vintage hotels, taffy and souvenir shops, and a day beach club with cabana service. Outside the city's hilltop gates, roughly 88% of the island remains undeveloped and managed as a nature preserve. You can't rent a car, and there's no Uber or Lyft. The wide dirt roads and the narrow TCT, as it's called, lead to quiet coves, rocky cliffs, and landscape that will remind you of faraway places. For me, it was a respite from the pandemic, if only for a night. The island was once the realm of otter hunters, smugglers, and ranching, mining, and military operations, according to one historical account. In the 1920s, it was owned by William Wrigley, Jr., of Wrigley Chewing Gum fame, who developed Avalon. Exploring the island's less inhabited side gives you an idea of what this land looked like when the Gabrielino Tongva tribe lived here 8,000 years ago. The hard way. The TCT takes about 4 days to complete, depending on how much time you want to spend. Backpackers can stay at 4 campgrounds along the way, each with bathrooms and running water. It's up to you to decide how much you want to carry on your back on the trail, which gains or drops about 9,000 feet along the exposed course. Late fall and early spring are good times to go to beat the heat and the crowds. You must make reservations for each campground before your trip. The easy way. I wanted the backcountry experience, but I also wanted it to be easy. The answer was Catalina Backcountry, a camping outfitter and gear hauling company that will take you just about anywhere you want to go in the outback for a price. I met backcountry owner Lorena Cassidy in Avalon to begin the adventure. She would haul my gear 16 miles on dirt roads to the Little Harbor Campground, where I had a reservation. She would set up a tent, sleeping bag, stove, chairs, utensils, kitchen items, and more. I handed off my food, too, which she put in a cooler to bring along. All I had to do was carry a day pack and get myself to Little Harbor on foot, a hike of about 12 miles. I made my way downhill toward the ocean. The water glistened, and the rocky cliffs jutting into the ocean looked like the paws of a huge animal. I loved everything about this moment. I dropped down into Little Harbor and found my temporary home, a tent tall enough to stand in, a cot with amenities on the pillow, including a snap light strip and hand warmers, chairs around the fire pit and firewood, a two-burner stove, and all the utensils I would need to make meals. I looked across the way and saw a lone bison standing in a neighboring campsite. Would I never escape these beasts? I left him alone, keeping an eye open to make sure he didn't get any closer. Hikers are warned to stay at least 125 feet away. The next day, I had a leisurely breakfast and felt guilty leaving my dirty dishes for Cassidy to pack up with the rest of my gear. I rejoined the TCT for the six-mile hike to Two Harbors, passing through some of the most beautiful landscapes along the route. A thick layer of fog swirled around me when I reached a high point, and the path dropped to the other side of the island. Again, I had found a quiet place that felt safe and apart from others, without giving up wild beauty. I arrived in Two Harbors, where Cassidy met me for the drive to Avalon to catch my boat. I vowed to return, and I would absolutely choose the wild side again. So, nice trip there to Catalina, I don't know about you, but all this hiking can make you a little hungry, which leads us to our next destination, Tasty Trails. Len and Seal Selden wrote this article to help you plan your next road trip around these southeastern food and beverage trails. Now, their article appeared in the September-October 2020 issue of AAA Go magazine. Travelers are hungry and thirsty for road trips of all kinds. The Southeast satisfies these foodie desires with a variety of culinary and beverage trails. From the Carolinas to Virginia, there's sure to be a trail for every taste bud. Of course, the region has always been known for great barbecue. The statewide South Carolina Barbecue Trail provides an ideal introduction to the four styles of sauces in the Palmetto State, known as the birthplace of barbecue. The popular trail features more than 200 restaurants across the state, providing a wide range of barbecue, classic sides, and varied dining experiences. Florence's South Carolina Pecan Trail includes more than 20 area restaurants featuring pecans in some way. Sample pecan pie, martinis, goat cheese and pecan salad, pecan crusted grouper, and white Russian, and I'll say this for those of you who prefer, pecan pie. Pecan lovers will also want to head to Florence's Young Plantation store. Sample beverages along the Satisfy Your Thirst tour. The map highlights more than 100 destinations across the state with beer, wine, spirits, and other beverages on tap. In Somerville, you'll find the Sweet Tea Trail. The area is known as the birthplace of sweet tea. The trail includes shops, restaurants, and their colorful birthplace of sweet tea mural. North Carolina, known as the barbecue capital of the world, has a long history of barbecue as well. Learn more about it along the North Carolina Barbecue Society, known as the NCBS Historic Barbecue Trail. It focuses on more than 20 historic barbecue destinations that still cook barbecue using the old-fashioned pit-cook method. Examples can be found in Lexington at Smiley's Barbecue and the Barbecue Center. In the west, the Western North Carolina Cheese Trail awaits. The trail and map feature varied cheesemakers, farms, and shops. You'll also learn about tailgate markets and other farmers' markets that feature cheese, as well as a variety of events like the Carolina Mountain Cheese Fest at Asheville's Highland Brewery. Alluring Asheville, known as the Beer City USA, touts several brewery-focused trails and tours. There's the Asheville Ale Trail, which is actually a one-stop resource for several breweries and tours and more. The Asheville Brews Cruise provides yet other options. North Carolina is also known for excellent wines. That's especially true in the rolling hills of the Yadkin Valley. Situated in the heart of the Yadkin Valley, the Surrey Wine Trail is an easy-to-follow trail, available as a downloadable map. It highlights 17 wineries in and around Surrey County, as well as 5 breweries and distilleries. Virginia also has developed into a renowned craft brewing destination with 200-plus breweries. The state even features more than a dozen different beer trails, including the Richmond Beer Trail and the groundbreaking Brew Ridge Trail west of Charlottesville. You'll find many award-winning wineries, cideries, and distilleries in Virginia as well. So, there you go. By the way, they have a little caution here at the end of the article. It says, if you plan to drink alcohol, be sure to bring along a designated driver. COVID-19 precautions may affect hours of operation and procedures at restaurants and breweries, and please contact venues directly for their latest updates. So that's something to keep in mind if that's something that you'd be interested in. Also in this September-October 2020 issue of AAA Go is Heidi Bellotto's article, Treat Yourself to Some of the Best Bakeries in the Carolinas, and we'll highlight a few of those. She begins, who doesn't love a sweet, flaky pastry, a slice of fresh-baked bread, or a melt-in-your-mouth donut? Well, lucky for us, there are many delicious bakeries throughout the Carolinas, and here's some of her favorites. The Table Farm Bakery in Asheboro, North Carolina, enjoy chocolate croissants, cinnamon rolls, seasonal muffins, or gluten-free coffee cake with your morning cup of joe. Don't miss the pie case. The selection varies with the seasons, but favorites always include their signature chocolate pie and oatmeal cream pie cookie. Then we have the Bobby Boy Bake Shop in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. This neighborhood bakery and coffee shop is owned by Chefs Lucia and John Bobby. Hot buns, sweet rolls, and intricate made-in-house pastries and desserts offer a sweet companion to locally roasted coffee. On the savory side, look for artisan breads crafted with locally milled flours and ancient grains. Then we have La Farm Bakery in Cary, North Carolina. French master baker and cookbook author Lionel Vadenay and his team delight visitors daily, featured on the cover. Anticipate an assortment of French pastries and fresh-baked boulets, batons, and baguettes made with locally sourced North Carolina wheat. On the sweeter side, breakfast pastries, tarts, and cakes. The white chocolate mini baguettes are legendary. And let's see, when she refers to featured on the cover here, I do believe that's right. Yep, wow, what a picture here of the chef and a huge loaf of bread. It looks like a giant cookie cake, if you know what I mean. So there you go. Wow, something to taste there on those trails here in the Carolinas. Well, that's going to do it for today's Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed your journey and that you got a snack in the meantime. We hope that you'll be listening next time. I'm Mike Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments and questions can be directed to 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.